I'll call the special budget meeting of March 31st, 2023 to order and have roll call.
Councilor Morley Haskell.
Councilor Nick Ryland.
Councilor Debbie Zublak.
Councilor Mike Heckinen.
Deputy Clerk Carly Britton.
Mayor David Bourne.
Director of Operations Greg Gossman.
Treasurer Russell Cantia.
Fire Chief and CEMC Robert Morrison.
Thank you. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none, I have resolution 23-248. Moved by Councilor Haskins, signed by Councilor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the agenda as presented for this special open meeting of Council. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Respect and acknowledgement declaration. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land in which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, and work towards truth and reconciliation. Resolution 23-249, moved by Councilor Ryan, second by Councilor Haskell. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby moved into committee the whole at
1:02 p.m.
to continue discussions on the draft 2023 budget. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Okay, and I guess we'll start with Roshan again just to give us a brief overview of the changes you've made and where we're at, and then maybe what we'll do is Rob has other things to attend to perhaps. We'll have Rob go first with his comments and then Greg.
Just sit here. It's on.
So thank you very much, Chairman and Councillors. Second draft of the budget is based on our discussion on March 17, 2023. And we revised the budget, I revised the budget based on our discussion, including that we had on that day discussion about the adjusting our operating expenses as well as the capital expenses. And after revising those numbers and also discussing with the Greg, now budget is balanced, and with the new levy is 5.94% increase, and the capital budget, we still need to review it, and as well as operating budget. So all the expenses has been captured. All the committees has given all the numbers. So as far now, the budget is full and complete, and so it's up to the discussion.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from council? Just general, of course. We'll get into the details.
Thank you.
Okay, since we have some of the department heads here, we'll maybe start with our fire chief, Rob Morrison. If you want to speak to your part of the budget, you have a copy of it, I assume?
I do. I'm just pulling it up right now.
Okay. And maybe just give us direction on what section to look at as we go through it.
Well, I mean, in terms of, do you mind if I pull a chair up?
No, that's fine. Sure.
So in terms of segments of the budget, is there any? Any segments of the budget that, in your eyes, require addressing?
Yeah. One scrappy one.
It's okay. I tested them all, but it seemed to be working fine earlier.
All right.
I just had one quick question, I guess.
Yep.
It's on page 5 in the larger document. This is the draft operating budget version 2, page 5, under fire fire department vehicles?
Yeah, stand by 1 second. Under fire department vehicles?
Yeah, it's, well, they're all 03-153. It's 202, rescue one?
Yes.
I just see the figure 2250 in there, and I'm just wondering what that's about with the new vehicle.
Well, so we are going to have standard maintenance that's going to be required as per any new vehicle. It's going to have to go for an oil change. It's going to have to go for whatever standard maintenance is called for by Dodge at this point in time. I expect that there will be very little of that budget actually used, but that was the standard pulled forward from years previously in terms of what the total would be for regular maintenance.
Okay.
Right. So that as part of my request and part of the explanation, I had requested that perhaps we can carry forward the balances in each of these GLs from year to year, so that next year that won't be 2250. It'll have the balance of whatever is not spent plus the 2250, so that we can account for a major expense in a savings account, essentially, instead of having to be surprised by.
Okay. And Roshan, you're ready to do that?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe you're doing it now, I don't know.
No, but then at the year end, we need a resolution, and I will do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Does that require us to move it into reserve, then, at the end of the year?
Yeah, it's going to introduce.
So whatever is unspent moves into reserve and then basically comes back into the budget as needed. Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, thank you.
So I would expect that that one in particular will accumulate for a good number of years before it becomes, if we have any kind of a major drawdown.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
Go ahead.
Maybe I asked this before, I was told this, but on that new vehicle, is it undercoated, rust-proofed, or does it have a chip or something in it?
No, it's not undercoated or rust-proofed. I believe it does have the electronic
thing. Okay.
The efficacy of those, I'm not
familiar with. I don't know. I have one in my car, too, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know whether it actually works or not, but that is what my understanding is. But it does have some kind of protection.
Okay.
So
I would probably recommend the undercoating as well, because the vehicle that I have has that, and it's very dry underneath there. There's still rust, and it's very dry. I think that the undercoating helps provide, you know, sort of an oil barrier, which I think is useful.
And you know, and by all means, this would be the year to do it, because I do expect that we will have an excess amount in that account under that vehicle. So this would be the year that I would expect to not have any major repairs to do on it. So I can look into that for sure.
And being the first year, now's the time to do it. Not 5 years down the line.
Yeah.
Yes, Wayne.
So just wondering regarding fuel, gas, fuel, diesel. How do you track that, you know, in regards to controllership policies and procedures? How do you track that to ensure that?
What we've instituted at the fire department back in September, I believe, was each vehicle now has its own individual logbook. Tracking didn't really exist in the past for our vehicles. I know the roads department tracks, you have the board at Station 2 that Scotty fills out, and they have their own books. Now each of our vehicles has their own logbooks, which contain all of the monthly check sheets, as well as anytime there's a fill-up. People write down the liter amount, the kilometers, and the date, and they sign it. So there is an accountability form now.
Great. That's good. Thank you.
Now, does that logbook involve the circle check as you go around prior to taking the vehicle out? I know you're in an emergency situation, but...
Yeah. So obviously, before we take a vehicle out, we can't do a circle check. All right. What we rely on now is monthly. Every Tuesday that I'm on shift at my other employment, people go to the hall and we do a complete teardown of the truck. We, if it needs to be washed, if it needs to have hose reloaded or anything like that, fluids, pumps, everything is checked. Brake checks are done on that Tuesday. So, and I feel comfortable with that being once a month and documented. We don't do a circle check before we leave because
no, I know.
Obviously, that would take valuable minutes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And the people with, I'm saying you rely on the previous check. Just certain people have access to that building then? Just certain keys out there? I'm just wondering what kind of
Every firefighter has access to both halls. They both know the door combinations. At station one, we have a keypad on the doorknob type thing. And at station two, we just have the big overhead door combination people know. So because we don't know from time to time, you may not get the same complement of people that show up on any given Tuesday, right? Yep. Or for any particular call. So everybody needs to have access to the halls. Yep. As far as the checks go, yeah, when I'm off, they do those checks, they're documented, and then following that, when I come back into town, I'll go around and I'll look at things, and the captains will send me an email saying, you know, this tanker two needs a new light bulb for the back bumper, or it needs this, right? So, and then that's how our maintenance is typically handled.
Okay. Does anything ever go missing from the fire ones?
Not that we've ever encountered, and not under my tenure. Nothing has ever been reported as missing. Things get broken, which happens, but you know, we had to replace a power washer last year and stuff like that. Who knows how it happened, but it did. But for the most part, no, we don't have things that go missing.
Okay.
We don't have things, we don't have a borrowing program or anything like that. So for the most part, things just stay put.
Good.
Yes.
Regarding the emergency planning budget, so what does that look like? In the past, when this was discussed, and was included under the fire department responsibilities when we first sort of brought this in, it was to have a certain amount of non-perishable goods on hand in the case of an emergency, so that if individuals needed to come to the emergency center, that there would be, you know, something for them to eat, there'd be warm drinks. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe anything ever had been done with that. And it was, you know, I believe they should ensure that you have, you know, X amount of days of these type of supplies.
Yes.
And then the goal was, and I seen you had it in your report, that prior to the expiry of each year, that it gets donated to the, you know, food bank or whichever organizations or several organizations that this might benefit. So that it helps that we're prepared, we're proactive, and it's helping the community as well?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So there is an option of that. One of the other options that I was considering was, instead of having to deal with that turnover, where yes, it is nice to be able to donate that to Harvest Share once a year, the Township of McKellar gets to make a nice gesture or whatever, whenever the expiry date comes up. But one of the other options that we have is with the general store in town, we could, in fact, create a contract, essentially, or a tab with them, so that in the event of an emergency, we could go over and grab the supplies that are needed. He obviously will have fresher stuff there, because he will be constantly restocking his shelves and so forth, right? So
I think the one thing is, though, like an emergency situation, if it's a widespread emergency, that it's good to have those stocks in place at the emergency center. Whereas, you know, having it a contract, which is an option, that it's not guaranteed that it'll be there if there was such a widespread disaster that there was a demand for those items.
Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That is something that we can look at for sure. We have, in the overall request of $5,000, there was, I believe, an $800 buffer in there that I was, again, this is one of those budgets that I was hoping that would be carried over year over year, whatever the excess was in the first year, because we have obviously our expenses that are going to have to come out in the first year: generator, batteries for the tower. Chris needs the ability to set up the evacuation center. Mary needs the ability to have the stockpile of office supplies and so forth. We could use that extra $800 in year one and purchase a good number of canned goods, bottled water, so forth, to create the stockpile here. The idea of this budget having that carryover was so that, like with the trucks, if anything major ever came up and we had to pay for the rental of a cat or a whatever, right? Maybe we've got $20,000 built up by that point in time, so it's not a direct hit to the township. It's in savings. But as far as food goes, yeah, that's we do have the room this year to be able to put an $800 investment into those supplies. So, happy to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a proactive way of not afterwards saying, why didn't we do this?
No, you know, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we're doing with the fire department is we're trying to put together almost a repurposing of our Rescue 3 vehicle that we have in Station 2. We have Jim Rabington, who's now been moved into the auxiliary role as a firefighter. He's no longer a frontline responder because of his age. With the new ENR bylaw, at the age of 70, you get pulled off the front line. You can take an active role in the fire department still as an auxiliary member. Essentially, through discussions with Jim, we've looked at Rescue 3 as being his baby. We'd like to stock that with extra water, extra food, so that that vehicle can be brought to the scene of a fire for an extended period of time. It can be called in through mutual aid to McDougal or Perry Sound. It can be brought to any emergency, and then it's like a primary evacuation center for the victims in the immediate area. We can set up a tent so there's shelter, there's warmth, until they can be evacuated to here. And that vehicle itself was already going to be stocked with water, power bars, and stuff like that, cliff bars, whatever you call them. Basic food items and drinks so that people can have something on scene.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a rehab facility for firefighters on extended scenes, or police officers, or whoever happens to be there.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. So that's Rescue 1.
No, that's Rescue 3.
Yeah, so it previously was known as Rescue 1.
Let me go back.
And I see it says 1998 Dodge Ram, now Rescue 3, so it used to be Rescue 1.
There is one here, so Rescue 1.
1998, yeah. Okay. That should read Rescue 3.
It does say there. It does.
It's sort of, if you like, I think that's really good to have it the way it is. Maybe Rescue 3 first, and...
Yeah, now Rescue 3.
Yeah,
there
okay.
You go.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
That's
yeah.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
I would like to add a couple of things. In the emergency minutes, I was talking to Rob, and Rob mentioned that on page 4... we have radio tower maintenance. That's supposed to be part of that line item. Line item should be part of the emergency management because that's basically it's all about the emergency. Am I right, Rob?
Yeah, radio tower maintenance, 150, 107.
107? Okay.
It's currently, was put in at $1,000. And it was to be moved to 107 and 108 were to be moved to the emergency planning budget now.
Okay.
106 remains in the fire budget because that, my interpretation of that is the portable radios and pagers and so forth that the fire department directly uses. However, the tower is a shared asset with the roads department as well as the township leases out space on it, I believe, so.
So why wouldn't you want to have it as its own line item? Like why would it go in an emergency?
It was only going to be moved into the emergency management budget, 107, 108. However it gets organized within that, in terms of GL codes, that money, that $1,000 there, that will cover the replacement of our batteries for this year because they're on a 4-year cycle and this is the 4th year.
I think for when we review the budget, it's nice to have that as a separate line item because we might not know that is if it's not spelled out in the
All he's going to do is move
the lines
for 107 now
and it'll say radio tower maintenance.
Yeah, so you can see one under emergency planning budget 150, 108 is the number that it actually has now and it's called emergency management.
Yeah,
and it's in here at 4,500. That should be 5,000, but the as part of that 5,000, 150, 108 was that thousand of one of the thousands of dollars that was moved into there. When I proposed this budget, I'm not proposing what the breakdown is in there. Like we could create a GL code 155, 101. It doesn't matter to me, you know what I mean? And that could be that $1,000. So I agree it should be its own separate line item, but that separate line item, I believe, should be part of the emergency planning budget and not part of the fire department, is all I'm saying.
Okay.
I know you have right up to date fleet, but looking at, this is on reserves, I guess, it appears, according to the budget, that $50,000 is being put into reserve, and that'll give you $65,000 for future vehicles.
Yeah, I'm just scrolling.
Yeah, and I know that's...
What page is that?
It's the reserve sheet, so I don't know if it has a page number. It has the yellow on it, it's highlighted that way.
Rob may not even have it.
And there it is, I got it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's 150,300, it's page, I guess, page 3 of the reserve sheets. Right here. Further down?
He's looking at this
one. Whereabouts? Fire, vehicle reserve? Yeah, okay.
It's the fourth line there.
Fourth line there. Okay, I see what you're looking at now. Yeah, 65,772 is what you see?
Yeah.
At the end? Okay.
And I'm just wondering, because we're looking at this, certainly, you know, getting the budget within something that's manageable, and putting $50,000 aside, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. Is that enough? Is that too much? Well, you'll never say it's too much, but...
Could we cut it a bit?
I think I understand
where you're going.
Yeah.
Picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah.
As the $50,000 that I had put in there as a transfer to reserve was the standard $50,000 that has been historically provided to the department, and we saw the benefit of the use of that this year with the update of Rescue 1. My recommendation, I'm sure as you can understand, will be to maintain that $50,000 because trucks are not going to get cheaper and it's going to take us longer in order to save up for these things. Yes, we have the benefit of a more modern fleet. And we saw that, actually, I got an email and a letter from the fire underwriters this week, and for the first time ever, our township has gone from a 5 to a 3B in terms of our insurance rating, which essentially is unprotected to protected. And a big part of that was the update of our fleet, so we now no longer had a vehicle that was close to 20 years old. And we've also added to our firefighter complement. So... those two were the major ingredients in terms of the upgrade for our insurance rating. Now, the benefit of that, according to them, is that we should be eligible for cheaper insurance, right? Both the ratepayers, township, whatever.
Yeah.
Whether that actually manifests itself is that's out of my control. But that was a major upgrade for the township this year in order to do that. And I just got that 2 or 3 days ago. So I would recommend, seeing the benefit of this so soon after making the upgrade, that we try to maintain the savings as much as we can. We did take from that also for the boiler in Station 2 this year, which was an unexpected expense. We do have, and as part of my council reports in the past few months, we do have a leak in the roof of Station 2. I don't know how much that's going to cost. I won't know until winter's over and I can get somebody up there safely to have a look at it and give us a quote. Our vehicles are very healthy and in good shape. The next one that we'll need, according to maintenance and age and all the rest of it, and mileage, the next one we're going to be looking at replacing is going to be Rescue 2. But that should be a few years down the road. So my suggestion would be to keep it in.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a sore point. I understand the motivation to cut a little bit. I get it. But I do feel like it has value, especially since these things aren't getting any cheaper. And working at another center that is a major center that has just made this massive investment in terms of electric fire trucks, and knowing that they've declared that you're not even going to be able to sell diesel vehicles or something beyond 2035, I don't know how that transitions into the public sector vehicles, into maintenance vehicles, into fire trucks. I don't know whether they will push for that or not, but it would be nice to be prepared for it. that truck costed $1 million. Hmm. And if we were forced to do that, it'd be awful nice to have an account sitting there that would at least absorb a substantial amount of it. So 10 years from now, that only puts us at 500,000.
Yeah.
If we never touched it for anything.
And that station you're talking about is very comparable to McKellar.
No, they're quite bigger, but I get it. I get what you're saying. But
no, I know.
I don't know what direction they're going to push
the
green agenda in and stuff like that. And how heavy they're going to come down with it, right? So,
yeah.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Any other questions for Rob?
I can provide counsel with a copy of that letter, by the way.
Yes, that would be interesting.
The underwriter's letter.
Yeah. It's interesting, the scale they use, they have to go the reverse, do they? Usually it's a 5 would be a positive. But
you would think so,
yeah.
Right? It's quite interesting, and I'll send you the attachments as well, because it also lays out distance from halls, and the way that they've done the mapping. Should the township grow substantially, and we have to look at the addition of a third firewall...
We're not going back to that, are we?
No.
That takes me back.
Certainly not right now.
Okay.
But should we ever have to, they lay it out pretty cleanly as to... It's pretty easy to interpret where that should be in order to account for the distance for travel and response times throughout the township. If as long as the road structure never changed. And we just added to the population.
So, even without a study, I'm sure the residents would tell us where it's supposed to be, as they have in the past.
I just have a question.
Sure.
Since you brought up insurance, on that page 4,
okay, which one?
The second line.
Page
1.
It's under admin, I think.
It's all part of the admin.
Oh, is that part of the admin?
Yeah.
So, where's your insurance is part
everything,
of the admin.
All departments insurance.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
That makes it much easier for us to interpret.
Yeah.
All the insurance rolled into one.
Oh, yeah. No, because I was looking at it and thinking, how come we never ever put anything here but that's insurance? Okay. Sorry.
No problem. No problem. Any other questions?
Sounds good.
No.
Good.
Okay. No.
Very good.
You're doing a fine job, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate all the time.
Thank you, Rob. Rochelle, I have a question for you. When I look at the GL number for the emergency planning, it's identical to the ones that Rob had identified up in up above on page 4. In other words, the 03, 150, 107, and 108. And yet, when I get down to emergency planning, it shows the same GL?
Yeah, it's the same GL. I just moved the line at the bottom and created the...
You literally just cut and paste?
Yeah.
Or drag them, whatever?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm just wondering. I thought you sorted by GL numbers, that's all. Okay, I understand.
So what does GL number mean?
General ledger number.
Okay.
It's just a booking number, but an expense
general
budget.
Ledger.
In this case,
makes
anyway.
Sense.
So,
okay, there have been some dramatic changes in the roads department. So, whether Greg wants to go through those or Roshan or what your line of thought was, the various changes.
Rob needs things done.
Oh, he doesn't have to. It's up to him.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Charlie.
He just wants to make sure that the road's not taking fire.
Yeah. That's what we don't want to do. I mean.
Oh, he's really getting into it. He's taking his coat off.
Well, heavy duty stuff.
Breaking into a sweat.
So you can see there's quite a few changes, right? Something that had to be done, and most of that cause is because of In-Homes Bridge. So in order to, and I'm glad In-Homes Bridge has been spread out over 2 years now, rather than 1 year. So, you know, last year and this year, or we wouldn't be able to afford it in.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to work.
Well, I'll be signing
this year.
Yes.
Okay.
So, anyways, so in order to not put too much of a pinch on everything, this is best case scenario, what you have in front of you. What else can you
well,
do?
Well, no, just the question, I didn't know, I guess you say it's over 2 years, so a couple of us are new to all of this, but so the bridge has already been paid for, or a percentage?
Percentage.
Okay.
What is it, probably 80% paid for?
Roughly 75% we paid.
So what was, can I ask, what was the cost of the bridge itself?
118,000.
118? Yeah, I got the... The stuff that's really hurting is the abutment work. That's where it really hurts. What do you do?
It's always like that, because even with the Minerva Park Bridge, it was always the abutment.
The abutments. Well, you can't put a bridge on, or you shouldn't put a bridge on, you know, unstable abutments. Well, I got you. You know, could we have tendered for an Algonquin bridge? No. You can't tender for an Algonquin bridge. Because an Algonquin bridge is an Algonquin bridge.
But they're not the only bridge manufacturers in Ontario, are they?
There's one other one. And most of the time, well, I mean, for so you can get a Bailey Bridge, Mike. You can get an Algonquin bridge. And then you can get a Forestry Bridge. Okay? That would be in our budget range, you know, without going to concrete or something like that. Now that's a different, whole different ball game. Yeah, the, for bridge installers, steel, mind you, wooden bridges, now that expands the manufacturers even more. But for steel bridges, there's three. There's, like I said, the Forest Bridge, the Bailey Bridge, and Algonquin Bridge. And Algonquin Bridge is the most cost effective for what we need. With a 75-year lifespan and a certified and no-load limit. So.
Well, that's what we want, is to
no-load. Yeah, exactly. You go to a Bailey, and I don't think there is on them, but you know what a Bailey's like. They're narrow, blocky, and they really don't. They're a temporary bridge. So
we could have still gone for a tender with the abutments and the installation work, though?
Nope.
Why not?
Because Algonquin Bridge, is their installer is Ian McPherson. So how do you tender out the that part of it?
I thought it said in this most recent report that that Algonquin suggested McPherson. And you know what? When you look at the bridge projects in McKellar Township since 1990, each one of them has had a, you know, have been different installers. And if you do sort of a search, there's numerous installers in Ontario. What I'm, my point is that for us as a corporation, and according to our procurement bylaw, there's sort of a process to ensure that, and we can go through the list of the reasons why, so that there's a competitive process, that we've done our due diligence, you know, for the corporation to look at with the through that process, then the scope of work is being laid out. And the other thing is that once you go through that process, it's a binding contract. So somehow we've gone from the initial June 24th, 2022 estimate of bridge installation of 15,000 up to the July 28th estimate of approximately 150,000, and now the total cost is that it's getting close to I think it's 350,000. So the reason for going through that process is so that scope of work gets laid out, and then you have a firm commitment. It's contractually binding, whereas now it's just it's being fluid through the process. So this is my position as a counselor, is that there's a reason why the procurement bylaw and going through a, that type of a process is there, and I just want to ensure that we're doing our being responsible and doing our due diligence in these positions. So, and I think it'll be interesting to see what the with the forensic audit, you know, when they look at, you know, how processes take place, and you know what they might sort of recommend for how processes should take place. So it's all.
So you don't consider this as an emergency?
Well, that's what we were told last June, and the bill.
Can you imagine right now ordering a bridge?
And the bridge was supposed to be installed because it was an emergency and not go through a tender process, because it was going to be installed last October, before October.
Yes.
So then it was emergency. So council's, well, it's emergency. Absolutely, we're going to do whatever we have to address this emergency. So we still have the same bridge that's there. What I'm saying is there's a process to ensure that we're doing our due diligence, and then it focuses on each of the things that need to be done. So then through that scope of we see that there is an abutment issue, or abutment should be some work done on the abutment. So that would have been laid out in the first, at the beginning of this process, by an engineering report, which we never even seen when we made those decisions on June 24th. I think the point is we need to have accurate information so we make good decisions, that it's well thought out, and that and when you have that competitive process, then you have.
I understand that, Mike, but this is a little different. Okay? This is an emergency. It's a year out. So by the time you put that bridge out to tender, we're not making a decision till now.
I was not talking about the bridge. I was talking about the installation part of it.
But we have to get clear with the installation is that it almost sounds like a sole source sort of thing, because if you go with Algonquin, which is one of the few that make this type of bridge, or maybe the only, then they have an agreement with another company, so they go hand in hand. You can't ignore the second one. That should be part of the deal up front, so you know what you're getting into. I agree. And I don't like the fact that we're just getting these statements now, one dated October 2022, and also the one from Bob Hughes dated September 2nd, the first I've seen this, 2022. So that would have been useful prior to any of our budget meetings to know what went on in the past. But
I wasn't invited to the last budget meeting, just so you know.
I know, but these documents are still available. So I don't know where these documents were and why they weren't provided, but that's all. As far as interpreting the procurement file, I think we are into a sole source situation, I would say, because if they're the only company that does this, and if this is the only company that they will let install, like they work together, then all I think Mike is saying is that we need to know full costs up front. And I don't know what your alternatives are if they're the only ones that provide the source. So if there's nobody else,
it's tough. The bridge. I agree, it's tough. And I agree with Mike. I don't disagree with the process. But as you get into these, the bridge was inspected. So it was inspected, it needed to be replaced.
Yeah.
Fine, go ahead.
Yeah.
Get the ball rolling on that. Go out with the engineer and now the engineer and the installer and the bridge builder. Met on site. Look at the situation. Find out then, it'd be a good time to look at these abutments.
Oh, yeah.
So they did look at the abutments. They come back with that price in October of, here we are, the X number of dollars for the abutment. Is there any control I can have over that? No. The only thing I can do is provide as much manpower as I can to help free up some space, basically, for the budget. Like, if this was a concrete bridge, say, for Middle River or any one of the ones, goes out to full tender, it's real simple. But when you're into a specific style of bridge, it's tough.
Well, I know. Like Dickinson was the exact same situation. So, when it was purchased, and it probably was Algonquin, if I recall, because I don't think there were any others at the time.
Yeah.
And they brought in with the crane too. I have to talk to, you know, former employees, but I'm sure they went through the same process you went through to get that in there. And then we were fortunate, I guess, that we had somebody close by that could actually deal with the old bridge, so they didn't have to worry about getting rid of it. But again, that one I would, I think, to see who was interested in it, to a type of request tender. So you're following the steps, yes. I guess just for us sitting here...
I know, you're just getting late information. Yeah. I realize that. Yeah. But you know what? With the election on last fall, it's not an excuse, but all the bullshit last fall, it's here now.
Yeah. Roshan.
I was just going to add that, you know, the installation agreement is signed.
The first one is.
First one, but the second one is just a quote. That quote hasn't been signed yet, so it hasn't been approved yet. So, you know, if you don't sign it as of now, these numbers can change.
Yeah, the only thing I see with that is that, if anything, they'll go up.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I know what you're saying, but again, and I'm seeing this too, and we're going to see it with future projects too, because of the cost of materials. No matter what is signed, there are sort of contingencies built in that sure. It can increase by a certain percentage, and that's bound to happen in today's market. But
mm-hmm.
Councillor Cuggan.
Yeah, so I think what we need to have is actual, you know, the documentation that lays out. So we have September 2nd, 2022, that we just received today. And the township obtained quotes from Algonquin Bridge, and at Algonquin's recommendation, a quote from bridge installer McPherson Andrews. When we received a copy of the new bridge drawings, we had several questions for Algonquin regarding the installation, including the location of the fixed bridge ends and the method of attaching the bridge to the abutments. The questions went unanswered. So, you know, there seems to be a lot of not enough concrete information provided to the decision makers to ensure that what's being provided or done is the best option, and what other, you know, what other options have been looked at. So it's at the end. So, you know, when this is installed, hopefully everything goes good, and we have a great bridge for the next 100 years. But what if it doesn't? You know, and we in the public says, and the public says, or prices go up in the middle, and like, the public expect us to do our due diligence, because when if something doesn't go according to plan, then the questions, you know, so why didn't they put it out to tender? Why did they get that installer? So it's just, it's part of the due diligence process to ensure that.
I realize that, Mike, but when you buy an Algonquin Bridge, this is what you get. Okay? You can put the tender out for a concrete bridge. I agree with that. That's not a big deal. But when you specify, I want a Algonquin Bridge, because we know that's the most economical bridge made, what are you going to do? Yeah, how do you put it out to tender is what I'm saying. I don't know. Like, it's a tough one.
So at the time when the bridge became faulty,
mm-hmm.
it was an emergency to council to have another bridge ordered and put in to start the process. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's what
it was considered an emergency. So it is what it is. It was an emergency, and now that was in the past. And now, well, maybe the due diligence should have been done then to say, okay, so what's it going to cost? And, you know, and we need this, and why are we not? It's an emergency, so we're not putting it out to as many people as we can find to do it. So this is what it is. This is what happened. But all I can say is now you know for in the future. But in the case of an emergency, and it sounds to me like the emergency is extended over 2 years. The bridge is still there. What are you going to do? It happened, and now we have to work around it.
I think that the gap took place. So we purchased a bridge. We own a bridge. And it never got installed last fall. So there was an opportunity between when the bridge wasn't installed last October, and here we are, March, seeing this revised expenses. So there's been an entire, you know, October, November, December, January, February, March, 5 months when it was known it wasn't going to be installed last fall, wouldn't it go out to tender for the installation and embutments and a full scope of work put out at that point in time?
So if I can, so there was fault on both parties then, because council, when they knew that it wasn't going to be installed until this year, right, then they should have proceeded and done something, and also like the paperwork should have come to council so that they knew what was happening, you know, for the costs and everything like that. So it broke down, but we have to move on.
What I'm concerned about is there's going to be other surprises.
Well, we have
to
make sure that there isn't. That's all you can do. It's like there's a learning experience.
I think there's contracts here, isn't there, to be signed? So what's wrong with the contract that you signed?
What was wrong with the contract that we signed in that was after the July 28th meeting?
Well, the problem was, I think that was just for installation. It didn't deal with abutments.
Yeah.
So somebody missed something there and saying that there's another contract we have to sign. And nobody seemed to know about it. That's why the information should have been forthcoming at that time, but it wasn't. So now you've got sort of an open-ended. In order to do that installation, first of all, you have to do the abutments. So that should have been done long ago, as you said. That should have, and it was, I guess, October. I don't know when it was received. That's when it was dated. So last council should have known. That's the cost of the abutments. I don't know when it was received by council.
And if I can also, I guess once you decided you're going to put the bridge in, and then they come out and inspect, right, to see about the bridge and where it's going, that's when, oh, you need to have these abutments fixed. So it's just like a domino. So once you get the different agencies out there, oh, you need this, you need that.
Well, I do recall at the June 24th meeting when I seen the installation cost of $15,000 that I did ask, you know, is that going to be accurate? So anyways, we'll move forward and hopefully we'll get a good bridge installed.
Much you can do. You just know for the future.
Now you had a difference in date too. It was going to be July, but now you talked about moving it forward, or?
No, I think it's still the end of,
still July?
Yeah, first of July. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's bugging me right now to sign that last abutment one back to him. He's bugging me today, so it's like, I'm awake. But what do you do? Not put out the, like, you know what I mean?
So,
well, that's the problem we're in right now, because they have you, because you've agreed to the previous one, and that's contingent upon this one you're going to sign now.
Right.
So
when that is signed, can they increase it again?
Oh, yes. I can always.
Well, can you not have something in
because
there?
What
so
will
this
happen?
Is the final. This has been going on for.
But you see what happens is, and this is what they always leave it open, that once we get in there, we didn't realize this is what we have to deal with.
It's everything.
Yeah, but they should have to suck
that. Even on a tender, it'd be that way.
Oh, yeah, it is. Always. Well, in most tenders now, they put a contingency for that very fact that they can be covered. I'm not sure if this one has one.
So if we had it went through it, in this is another reason why we can't. I canceled it in what was it, October, November. It would have cost an extra $40,000 for winter work. That's considered winter work in November. So
by the installer.
Yeah. Well, which is because of calcium chloride and propane, okay. Right? That's just makes sense. But I said to Bob, I said, "Oh, fuck that." Sorry, my language, but I've had enough. I'm not paying any more, so...
Yeah, so you didn't pay for the winter work, but now they upped it 40.
I know you guys would like to have this neato information in October. Would it have done us any good? We're just starting the budget right now.
We will put it out for tender, the installation and abutments.
Oh, Mike, what part of that don't you understand?
Yeah, no, we just said that there's only one installer for Algonquin Bridge, which is the cheapest bridge.
It said recommendation from Algonquin Bridge. It did not say that there was only one installer capable of doing this. When you look at the installation companies, the bridge work that we've had done in McKellar here since 1990, there are numerous installers that are professionals that are qualified to do this work. It's great that they have a good working relationship, but I haven't seen anything that says that they are the only installer.
That may just be a polite way of their wording it, but also the fact that I don't know of any other bridges that were actually installed like this except Dickinson. The rest were built from the ground up, sort of. So I don't recall in my years any other big crane coming in and dropping in a bridge.
Well, so bridges are built across Ontario.
Oh, you said McKellar.
So anyways, I'm just referring to those four projects in McKellar, but when you look at Google search of bridge installation companies in Ontario, there are massive projects continually replacing bridges, building new bridges in Ontario. So I just want to ensure we're doing our due diligence.
Yeah, I think in this case you got two in one, because Algonquin has another company, part of it, that we don't deal with you unless you use these people, even though they say recommend. This is the engineer saying recommend, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know the relationship between Algonquin and McPherson, but it looks like they're pretty closely knit, and maybe, I don't know what the connection is. But it seems like you can't get one without the other. Roshan.
I was going to say that, you know, the abutment quotation, right, it says on the back side, if that bridge has, or abutment has to be done in winter, then you have, they will charge extra $39,000.
Yeah, in 40, yeah.
So that would have been increased if you would have done it in the winter.
So anyways, that's done. This brings on this new budget. And in order for everybody to keep their jobs, this is the best case scenario. There's postpone McKellar, Center Road. I can patch it up for this year. I can patch up Greenville Road.
While you're saying that,
yep.
This grant, I just want clarification.
Yes, yeah.
That carries over, we're okay?
Yeah, because we get an extra 100 and what?
109,000
again next year.
Okay.
And to be put towards that project and or other projects.
Okay.
My plan was to use most or partial for Center Road and then the remainder for Herdville Road.
Right.
From the Four Winds to just up above Burnett's. Next. Now it'll be 2 years out. But in the meantime, I'll patch up Center Road and Herdville Road with greater patches like you've seen on by lanes.
Boy.
Yeah, So it'll be like that. Is what we'll do to Center Road and Herdville Road, no bad spots. That'll get us through. I'll get this bridge out of the way and move on. It's a simple process, and then I'll rent a ditching material for a machine for the summer. We'll carry on. We get a bunch of ditching we've been planning for 10 years out of the way, and move forward. So, it's an unfortunate thing to happen, this bridge, but let's deal with it and move on. Right? That's all I can say is...
Yeah. I'm just wondering, again, looking down the road, that you're saying next year, of course, we'll probably be sitting here next year and running into other expenses. But
yeah, sure they will, but we'll have Center Road... Probably by then, probably 70% covered.
Okay.
With grant money, versus now we're probably at almost 50%. So you know what I mean? Like, we'll put it off another year. That's another $109,000 towards the project. For next year, that kind of leaves a few more doors open for more projects, which is more micro sealing for next year. We'll do a little bit this year, the two that really needs to be done, and then move on.
And the cost of material?
I can't keep up with it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard the report on the bathroom yet, but...
Oh, yes.
No. No, I haven't.
Well, what we say is, hold it.
Do you want to hear them? It's terrible.
Really?
It's ridiculous. So
you know what I mean? Like, I just don't know how... Yeah, when you have a bridge like this in our way, and those type of things that haven't been done by 2025... How is a municipality supposed to do that kind of this kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Like, really? Where are we going to get the money for it? I've gone through all my stuff and I'm like, I can't cut anything else. You know what I mean? Like, it just isn't
enough. Well, again, if municipalities band together, there's a possibility that maybe the provincial government hasn't looked far enough ahead in what they're providing, so there may be extra funding at some point. or they may change their long-term plan and what has to be done by certain dates. All we can do is hope. Yeah. But I know dates are out there, and that's what you try to meet, and they hope you do.
Yeah, but I mean, next year or whatever, the end of next year, and we're still like trying to scrounge up another 100 grand to go towards a bathroom.
Yeah.
It's not, that doesn't even cover enough of it yet. Just for one room.
Right, Councillor Ryan, you have a point.
Well, I was going to touch a bit what you said, Dave, about future grants and that. And then I haven't read any good news from the federal budget or the provincial government. They seem interested in cities. The province does, and then the feds basically said what commitments with the ICIP grants that are out there now. That's all there's going to be for the next 3 years, basically. So there's not a lot of money coming from anywhere. So, and I know where we're sitting with the ridiculously increased prices for, like, you're on this bridge and that bathroom quote that I just seen, which is absolutely absurd. We are going to be in a really bad situation going forward. I'm just hoping that the reassessments can be done, and then it's just going to be a massive reality check for McKellar. We are short hundreds of thousands of dollars to keep this township functioning and being repaired on an ongoing basis. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands, could be $500,000 that we're short, I can see going into the next few years. So it would be a massive tax increase. Well, not massive, but right now you probably have to be looking at a 10% tax increase to start covering, to not fall, because we're steadily falling behind. I think a lot of our roads that you're not even touching on are just around the corner. Again, ones that were tar and chipped 5-6 years ago, they're not even being talked about.
Or you get
the budget.
These bad winters like we have now, that's just so hard on the roads. Like, it just, it adds, all adds in, whatever it's called, climate change or whatever's going on over here. Like, moving forward, we're going to have a bigger plan.
Well, I know. I would have to ask Councillor Haskam, can we find an extra million in there anywhere that might go to this township and not to the area?
So the so the infrastructure deficit, it's not a new thing. The 2014-2015 asset management plan was already saying that McKellar Township was $1.19 million in infrastructure deficit. It doesn't look like good news. Even grants that were provided previously by different levels of government, I haven't seen them being renewed. I sort of took a quick look, and ones that we had received in the past to see if there was new intakes coming in soon, and it didn't look like the same opportunities for grants as there was in the past, which was very helpful. Burnett's Road, $1 million project, funded, I believe it was 90% by the province. You know, those are the kind of grants that we need to ensure that, and that's why it would be good to have not just the core asset management plan, but one that included all of the assets to see what the infrastructure deficit is now, so that we can, because we really need to take a look at the 10-year asset management plan, because anything that we put back or put forward this year, or that we put forward last year that aren't getting done, they're piling up on the infrastructure deficit side of things, and we've got to see, you know, where this all comes to a point where there's this massive infrastructure deficit that needs to be. So we need to see this 10-year asset management plan to see, to make wise decisions now to ensure that there isn't this point in who knows when in the future that we're like, whoa, we should have really thought about this a little harder.
You know, and I think, like Morley was saying, you know, a few years back, maybe when we were a little light on the taxes, we should have kept that a little bit heavier. That way, right now, when the crunch is on, it's not such a burden. It doesn't feel like it's such a burden. You know, we should have kept that up a little bit. But you can say what if all you want, right? You know.
So I think, you know, we do need to look at the 10-year asset management plan. I have never been a fan of, you know, going into it, taking out debentures for anything.
No.
But recently reading some information on, you know, the amortization of the value of assets,